All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
And good afternoon. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. Dale is out doing some recon out in Boston, so he'll be back next week full of new ideas, I'm sure. We have in studio with us today two of our regular guests here on Disability Question Weekend, Michael Smith. He serves as the director of Washtenaw County Department of Veterans Affairs. Michael, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Jim, it's always good to be here on the radio with you and our other distinguished guests, or with Bob and Dale. So it's good to be here.
We're glad to bring you in on a rainy Sunday with the Lions losing a close one, and well, at least our Michigan Wolverines won a big one yesterday. We'll see if that amounts to anything later on with against Rutgers. Derek is laughing in the control room, knowing full well that that game doesn't tell us anything, does it, Derek?
Not a thing.
Our other guest in studio today is Carol Ann Fossone, Brigadier General Carol Ann Fossone, retired, now serving as a veterans advocate and working with Legal Help for Veterans. Carol Ann, welcome to being in studio and again on Veterans Radio.
Oh, it's great to be here and to be debating these issues face-to-face with Michael Smith. Thank you, Michael.
Always good to be here with you.
Well, let's hope it's not a debate in the end.
Oh, no. No, never a debate. Just a sharing of information.
So we want to tell people that if you have questions regarding the VA, about veterans' disability issues, maybe things you've been told at the post or out in the bar, or from your brother-in-law who you don't believe, give us a call at 734-822-1600, and we'll see if we can have our experts clear things up for you. And we want to start by thanking our sponsors, the Vietnam Veterans Association of Kettles Chapter 310 here in Ann Arbor, the American Legion Post 46, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423, and U.S. Wings. You can find them at uswings.com, the makers of great leather products and coats. And certainly our friends at Legal Help for Veterans, where you can reach them at 800-693-4800. We're going to start today talking about the Mission Act. There's been a lot of discussion about it. Actually, the three of us just came off a participation in a veteran summit, and I think the Veterans Act was probably one of the things the audience was most interested in and that many of our speakers needed to touch on because it's all kind of new. And then later, and kind of to, for our listeners to understand that, there are layers to the Mission Act. There's layers dealing with care in the community, how you get urgent care in the community, and support for caregivers. So we're going to talk about all those different layers or chapters here so that you can better understand what the Mission Act is if you're hearing about it here in the WAM listening area. And then the second half of the program, we want to talk about some issues on suicide prevention. It's Suicide Prevention Month. We're closing that out. There's an interesting issue about employer bias in hiring of veterans I want to talk about. And then we'll also talk about a recently announced community-based outreach clinic. The location has now been announced by the Ann Arbor VA. It was secreted till about I think Friday morning, so we'll talk about that a little bit too if we have time. That one's of interest enough that Michael and Carol Ann are whispering to each other on air. Hopefully we're not hearing that, but you can't, Carol Ann, you really can't whisper on air. So just sort of a professional tip, and I've got Derek laughing, so everything's working out well. The call-in number again on WAM is 734-822-1600 if you have questions that you'd like our experts to give you some thoughts on. But let's start with the Mission Act. Michael, why don't you start and explain what the Mission Act is broadly and what it replaced, because people keep talking about what's no longer in existence.
Well, Jim, you know, the VA's already always had care in the community, and it was on a limited basis, going all the way back to, if you remember, what was referred to as the Millennium Bill back in 2000, the Mill Bill, was the first attempt by the legislature to really kind of shore up how the VA conducted its care in the community, because they always wanted to make sure that veterans had available to them the best health care, whether it was being provided by a VA facility or it was being provided by a contractor out in the community. So the Millennium Bill was the first attempt, again, to kind of provide rules to veterans and community providers about how care in the community would be conducted. And then if you remember back in 2014, the Inspector General went out to the Phoenix VA Medical Center and found some problems with that facility. And Congress wanted action, and they wanted action by the VA right now and quick and fast. And so what ended up coming out of that was the CHOICE program. And the CHOICE program came up with some new parameters for how veterans could obtain their health care out in the community in coordination with the VA. And the CHOICE program was wrought with many problems. And I think one of the biggest problems was that there was a third party involved with paying the contractors out in the community. They weren't getting their money on time. Therefore, vets were getting stuck with huge bills. Of course, those were all taken care of at one point. But what President Trump did last year, along with the Congress, was they signed into law the Mission Act, which essentially replaced the CHOICE program. And they wanted the VA to take about a year to get their rules together and how they were going to actually implement the Mission Act. And it went live this year, June 6th, 2019, I believe, on D-Day, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And what the Mission Act essentially did was really provide some good instructions to the VA about how they would coordinate care for veterans out in the community. They added a new piece, which was the urgent care. And they actually extended the caregiver support program beyond those who were service disabled through Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Enduring Freedom, or Operation New Dawn.
Well, I want to point out the importance of this in that VA recently put a press release out that more than a million veterans have already consulted VA about going to a private doctor since the Mission Act rolled out. When you see that kind of adoption in the veteran community, you know it's something that people are waiting for. And Carol Ann, in your discussions with folks at the VA, do you find that they are embracing the Mission Act, that they see this as positive for the veteran community?
Yes, I do, very much so. But I think as Michael explained the history of this, there's one piece of this that everybody's very concerned about. And just the little snippet that you read, 1 million people reaching out to them, you still need to be eligible and you still need approval from the VA so you're not hooked with paying a bill. That is the biggest thing right now that some veterans are assuming they could just go out, as Michael said, the problems with the CHOICE program, you know, it was the distance and the amount of time. You now have a better choice, possibly, to get another provider. However, it must be approved by the VA.
So let's talk about that a little bit. And if you're a veteran out there or a family member of a veteran and you've used the Mission Act over the last 3 months or so, give us a call at 734-822-1600 and tell us your experiences, and let the other WHAM listeners know here on Veteran Radio your experiences, the pluses and minuses of doing that. But, Michael, let me turn back to you then, and let's elaborate on what the general has pointed out, which is this isn't a free-for-all. You don't just get to run to anybody, any medical provider for any condition. Certain veterans are able to enter into the program and have certain types of services available. So let's just talk, not urgent care at the moment, not caregivers. Let's just talk about what has to happen to be able to use that community care choice under the Mission Act.
Well, as General Fasson always impresses on our listening audience is this: you must be enrolled in the VA healthcare system. So if you're a veteran and you're not enrolled, you can't expect that you can go out and get services from a community provider and then walk over to the VA hospital and have them pay the bills. That's just not the way it works. One of the reasons why the VA had 1 year to really get rules in place for how implementation of the Mission Act was going to look was they were building their vetted already list of community providers. So there's general medicinists, there's family doctors, there's cardiologists, there's eye care specialists. There's the VA had to go out into the community and find those community partners who would be willing to treat veterans, number one. Two, go through training, believe it or not, because the VA is in the business of providing health care to veterans every day, and their employees are veterans or predominantly veteran, and because that is their only customer, they had to develop a training program for our community providers because they're seeing other people other than veterans, and they certainly wanted those community providers to be trained in certain areas of sensitivity so that they would know how to actually interact with the veterans that were being referred to them for care. So there was a list that is built. That list is continuing to be expanded as the VA goes out and continues to identify community partners that would be willing, again, to work with them to deliver health care to veterans. But certainly the biggest thing to consider is they have to be enrolled in the VA health care system. And then there's certain other criteria that have to be met before they're going to be referred out into community, such as the VA hospital in Ann Arbor, say, for instance, is unable to provide a certain service that the veteran needs, or it's in the best medical interest of the veteran to go out in the community, or there's certain things that the VA also considers when they think that it might be better to send that veteran out to a community partner as opposed to treating him or her at the hospital.
Well, and I think that's, again, one of those things that you hear, oh, I can get care in the community, I'm going to rush out and do it. Whoa. There are rules. You have to be approved to go out and do this in most circumstances. And the idea that there needs to be some training of the medical providers who get authorized by VA, when you say it out loud, it makes some sense. So it's good that VA is thinking of those things. And I think that's one of the things we have to give VA credit for as this has evolved over the years, as a choice program started up kind of as a almost an emergency. Congress wanted it and wanted it now system. Well, when you adopt something rapidly, it's very likely that maybe you didn't consider everything. And so the Mission Act seems to be more thought out. Implementation's always the real key, right? You can have the best battle plan in the world. It's going to be how it gets implemented.
That's correct.
Carol-Ann, would you can you talk any about how providers might look at this as a do you think medical providers are going to embrace being part of the VA Mission Act program, or do you think there'll be some reluctance?
I don't know how to answer that, Jim, in the sense that I think that some will be really excited to be a part of this in the community, to be a part of the VA, to continue on. I think what will play into it is, Michael was talking about some of the criteria. I do give the VA credit, big time credit, because as a nurse, in certain areas, service lines, if they're not able to meet the standard of care, they are going to refer into the community. And that's when your expert orthopedic surgeons or oncology, even in a service that could be offered, but if there is something so rare or special, they're going to go out to the community to get the right provider. And I think that provider offering those services will be very happy to be a part of this system. You know, there's one other criteria. If you've been grandfathered under the choice program, you will most likely be able to continue on in that, depending on territorial or distance, or a specific provider because of your medical diagnosis.
So if you're a veteran who's been using the old choice program, mm-hmm. you're saying that they will keep you on or bring you into the Mission Act program as a patient.
You could keep your outside community provider because it is, as Michael said, in the best interest of the patient. You know, what's going to give that patient the best outcome? And my hat's off to the VA, and I think the providers will embrace this.
Well, one of the questions asked at the Veterans Summit that we all attended recently was, is my provider that I currently go to, are they approved? And I saw a statistic somewhere that there's like 5,000 providers approved now by VA as part of the Mission Act program, which seems like a lot, but not really when it's spread over the nation. I think there's a website or someplace you can go to actually look in your locale. I don't expect anybody to recall the website off their head, but does anybody happen to have it written down in a note?
Well, actually, it's best to just to go to va.gov, and there is a tab called a VA Facility Locator, and you can select the type of facility you're looking for, and if you ask for all health facilities, it will not only show you VA healthcare systems or VA medical centers, it will also show you the community providers within that area code or that city. There is a website. It's va.gov, and just go to their VA facility locator tab.
And if you're not a proficient internet user, as maybe you're a veteran without those resources or skill sets, I'm sure you can call your local VA, talk to your social worker, and get some direction on those providers in your town or area that can be a support. And again, if we've got any WHAM listeners who have used the Mission Act, give us a call at 734-822-1600 to help translate your experiences for those who are listening in to Veterans Radio.
Jim, I want to give you a really good kudos to the VA again. Women's services. Mm. All the women's services are not provided at a VA, so they will try to go out and get you a provider. If that one provider that they're, let's say, contracted with cannot give you that service in a reasonable amount of time, maybe it's a follow-up for cancer or it's the diagnosis, something out there, they will ask you who you have been going to, and they will make the calls to try to get some arrangements on a, you know, one-time basis for you to get care. So I also think they are trying. Now, this is through the Ann Arbor VA, so, and I'm sure Detroit and all the other medical centers in Michigan are also trying to do the same thing, and across the country.
Well, it's a demonstration of a real commitment to customer service, which I think we've heard from the VA, and it's nice to see them follow through on it. I want to turn now, staying in the Mission Act, but talking about what it did relative to urgent care, because I think, again, this is one of these questions when you're out talking to veterans. You get a lot of talk about this because people are concerned, what if I get into an accident or I have a problem and I don't have time to schedule or the ability to drive somewhere? So, Michael, why don't we turn to you and tell us what the Mission Act did in terms of improving urgent care in the community for veterans?
Well, again, the VA turned to community partners that provide urgent care services. Again, urgent care being non-emergent services. They've always had something in place for emergencies. That's, again, going all the way back to the Mill Bill, where if you have to go to an emergency room at a non-VA facility, there are certain rules you have to follow, such as contacting the VA within 72 hours, those physicians at the non-VA facility talking to your physician at the VA for them to determine if you're stable enough for transport. If not, then the VA authorizes you to stay at the non-VA facility to get your care, and then they'll take care of those bills. Now, not everybody needs emergency room services, and most veterans are in need of urgent care services, which is somewhat limited at VA facilities. Mm-hmm. They had an urgent care facility that they turned back into an emergency room. Right. And so it's not as accessible as veterans need it to be, and it's certainly not close to where veterans are. So when the Mission Act, the VA went out and found community partners, again, that provide urgent care services, and they built another list of providers that are in their network where veterans are authorized to receive urgent care services out in the community.
And Carol Ann, as a 40-plus year nurse, tell us a little bit about what urgent care is and how you view this new aspect, if you will, for the Mission Act.
Well, I think it's outstanding, and with the urgent care, they've also, Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, there's two tiers. You could get your urgent care either from a retail location or the urgent location, say, as a walk-in. Some of the things to consider that you wouldn't want to tie up an emergency room is colds, earaches, minor injuries, maybe a little pink eye, which we don't want pink eye, but skin infections, a strep throat, something that you're just not feeling good. You're not tying up a major trauma center. You're going to get in and out. They're willing to look at that. And, you know, splinting, you have a slip and fall, an easy slip and fall, not a head, but something not complicated. Maybe you think you have a little food poisoning. You're just not feeling good, that malaise. And so I would encourage the Urgy Center is great. One of these concepts, retail, they're saying that you could walk in and, once again, uncomplicated, but you need to find out which one of those, maybe a CVS for an immunization, something like that will surpass. But ask your provider, and well, I think this is great.
We may have to do another program on that because I don't know that I researched that, but I do know that VA is talking with the national retail guys, whether it's Walmart's or CVS or Walgreens or Rite Aid, who I'm probably forgetting somebody, and we'll get Derek will get an angry email from somebody that we didn't mention them. But I think that's a really interesting concept that this embodies and would allow, because again, in many urban areas, you can't, you know, go more than about four blocks without going by one of those kind of retailers who are moving into the healthcare area, you know, at that low urgent care kind of basic service level. So that I think that's an interesting change. Michael, have you had anybody who's had experiences going to urgent cares yet under the Mission Act? Have you talked to anyone?
Not at this point. Most of our veterans are really happy about getting in to see their primary care physicians. They have no problems getting in to see any of their specialty clinics over at the VA Ann Arbor healthcare system. So at this point, no one's actually said or talked to me about their experience of going to an urgent care in the community. What I'm happy to see is in the Ann Arbor area, there are tons of urgent cares who have actually said they would love to partner with the VA and provide that care to veterans.
Well, that's excellent. Carol Ann, anybody that you've bumped into that's utilized this aspect yet of the Mission Act?
No, except at the Veterans Summit, we did have a couple walk up to us and say they wish they knew this because they had to go to the emergency room because they had a slip and fall and needed sutures. And so that's another great example. If you need stitches, something very simple, not life-threatening. If you've got chest pain, if, you know, you're fainting, you get to an emergency room. But some of these slip and fall, non-threatening, the veterans were saying, wow, you know, I had the long wait because there was a lot of trauma. Literally, this would have helped them.
Well, we're working on clock management here. I feel like I'm a coach of the Lions, which doesn't do that very well either. I want to turn to caregivers before we hit the bottom of the hour in the news here on WHAM and talk a little bit about what the Mission Act does for caregivers, because it really kind of expands the program, and it needs to be talked about because it doesn't expand it immediately. So, Michael, why don't you give us an update on the caregiver program?
Well, the caregiver program was created initially to allow for people to volunteer to be the full-time caregiver for veterans who are catastrophically wounded or were suffering from traumatic brain injury or post-traumatic stress disorder. And those persons would actually work in concert with the primary care physician and the primary care physician team to develop a home health care program, and then they would then implement that home health care program, taking care of veterans in their own homes in connection with the care that they received at a VA facility. And then those family members primarily, or others, were provided with a stipend from the VA. But it was specific to our Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, and Operation New Dawn veterans. And what people were saying, and veterans in the community were, hey, listen, almost all of our veterans, there are other caregivers, or primarily family caregivers, doing this very same thing for our Vietnam-era veterans, Korean War veterans, World War II veterans, and veterans of other eras. And so what we saw in the Mission Act was the Congress and the President expanding this caregiver program to other eras, but they're going to do it in two phases, I believe, over the next couple years, with the implementation in 2020, with extending the program to veterans of the Vietnam era, and again, focusing on those that were catastrophically wounded.
Well, it's really a matter of equity, and maybe we'll come back after the news and pick this up to talk about it a little more, because it affects so many family members. But stick around after the news and come on back to Veterans Radio. Call in with questions at 734-822-1600. We've got some interesting discussion to go on suicide prevention, employment issues, and continued community care in the local community. With that, we'll be right back after the news.
Hi, this is Mitch Albom, author of Tuesdays with Maury and The First Phone Call from Heaven. Thousands of veterans are homeless and living on the streets of our nation tonight. Streets where they've been beaten, robbed, even killed. Let's take care of our own. Please join me in housing 1,000 veterans as fast as possible. Make a pledge to veteransmatter.org. Text VETS to 41444 and pledge any amount. Veterans Matter.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone, Officer of the Deck today. I'm here with Michael Smith and Carol Ann Fossone. General, I cut you off at the bottom of the hour. We were beginning to talk about caregivers, which we were kind of shoehorning in. We realized how much time we had consumed on the Mission Act earlier. But you wanted to make a particular point on caregivers and reimbursement under the Mission Act and some of those issues.
Well, I think the biggest element for me as a nurse and a daughter of a veteran, and I saw when my dad was ill, they want to be at home. And the caregiver program plays a critical role in enabling the veteran to sustain and maintain the highest level of independence, to be in their home, be with their loved ones. And who takes care of these veterans anyways? You know, a son, a daughter, the spouse, and to be in your own home and go through that. And now afford a chance for a little stipend, you know, to take care of them 24/7 and be there. I think that's so important.
I agree. You know, when you see the this practice is already in place, and many of these children, sons and daughters or spouses or other family members who are providing that in-home care to a loved one that's a veteran, they're doing it without pay. And they're giving up, in most cases, their own jobs and any other sources of income. And so they're relying on maybe income that the veteran has coming in from disability compensation or Social Security disability or both. But that really puts that small family unit in a negative position from a perspective of income and being able to take care of themselves together. So when the VA can come in and certify a family member as a primary caregiver and then provide those people with a stipend that is pretty significant, and that will give that family unit, the ability to have something coming in that helps them have some food and helps them be able to pay those utility bills or pay mortgage bills or rent, or just to be able to survive without having to know how am I going to be able to continue to do this and sustain it?
And as we well know, I love the way this program is set up because it's just not one individual. Let's call it a team. Mm-hmm. So if you've got the spouse who, you know, is doing the majority of it, the heavy lifting, but if she wants to go out shopping or get her hair done or just get some respite time, you could ask a niece, a nephew, you know, a daughter, a son. So you identify the people that are going to care for this veteran and then be reimbursed. That gives a lot of hope and to the veteran that he or she could maybe stay in their home.
Well, I also think that it allows the veteran to have a little honor and pride and self-worth.
Yes. Yes.
That his service is supporting that effort as compared to he's draining everybody's resources, as you mentioned, Michael. So it's I think it's good all the way around. I think there's a certain equity component to this where if you're giving it for the younger vets, why aren't you giving it for the older vets? But there is a rollout time period.
That is correct.
And maybe we should talk about that. And if you are one of those caregivers and you're thinking, well, how do I get involved in this program, Michael, why don't you speak about the rollout and how they get involved?
So the caregiver support program is going to be expanded to eligible veterans who incurred aggravated or serious injury in the line of duty after May 7th, 1975 through September 10th, 2001. That will be in 2020. And then, and I believe the first phase, is going to expand care to those who incurred serious injury in the line of duty prior to May 7th of 1975, which would be our Vietnam era veterans.
Right. Cool. Before we switch over to suicide prevention, I did want to give the call out number one more time, 734-822-1600. And this time, I promise when you call in at the break, Derek walked in and said, "Hey, Jim, the lights were flashing. People were calling in. Why didn't you pick up?" So, Dale, if you're out there listening, I made more than a couple of mistakes in that first half hour. And my co-host said, "Yeah, we saw the red lights flashing, but we didn't know what they meant." So we'll hopefully get to you if you call in. We'd love to have and hear your experiences if you've been involved in the Mission Act. But it's important to – now I'm being told there's one more thing before I can go to suicide prevention. Yes, General?
Thank you, Mr. Fasson. All right. So if you have any questions about the caregiver program, www.caregiver.va.gov or call the support line, which I think is really important, 855-260-3274. I'll give you that again, 855-260-3274. 3274, because they could answer those questions that you're concerned about for making sure you are eligible for this program.
And I'd like to say one last thing about our Congress and our president, how timely this Mission Act is at this iteration of health care for veterans. And a kind of a culmination of things that have been going on over the years in recognition of that the VA just could not do it all by itself and looking to community partners to come alongside them and help out to do one thing, and that is this: make sure that the veterans of this country have the health care that they deserve and need. And the bottom line is this: the VA is still the one in charge of that veterans or those veterans' health care, whether that's going to be provided at a VA facility or the VA is going to coordinate that health care out in the community. They're still the one who has the charge to take care of those veterans' health care.
As the listeners can see, although I'm the program host, I have absolutely no control over the program. Both Carol Ann and Michael decided they had one more thing they wanted to say, but we are now going to move, my friends, to suicide prevention issues because of the importance of it. This is Suicide Prevention Month. We recently heard from Tara Consolino, who has a master's in social work, and was licensed in that area. She's the director of substance use disorder and suicide prevention and outpatient social work at the John D. Dingell VA Medical Center down in Detroit. And she was reminding us of the importance of this issue in that suicide prevention is something that we all have an obligation to pay attention to. It's not a veteran, it's not his or her issue. It's not the VA's issue. It's all of our issues. And, in fact, Tara spoke about a little idiom that she uses to kind of teach people about this, and that is the path warm? And there's all kinds of different mnemonics you can use to work your way through this as a friend or a family member or a coworker or somebody. So is the path warm? Is things like, has there been an ideation or threatened or a communication of suicide? Is there substance abuse excessive or increased? Path is purposelessness, no reason to live. A is anxiety. T is trapped feeling, no way out. H is hopelessness. Warm is withdrawal from friends and family. A is anger. R is recklessness. Risky, taking unrisky acts without thinking, and M is mood changes. So it's certainly one way, is the path warm, to think about those little different tick marks on, geez, is his or her behavior such that I ought to ask them how they're doing. But, Michael, I know you just came back from a program where county counselors were being trained in this area. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
So, yeah, just on the heels of Tara sharing at the summit, I left there, had a nice two-and-a-half-hour drive up to East Tawas, where the Michigan Association of County Veteran Counselors, we were conducting our fall conference, and we had the suicide prevention coordinator from the Saginaw VA Medical Center doing a presentation as well. And, yeah, they do have several acronyms. I like Tara's, is the path warm, but the VA's main acronym that they use is SAVE. It's just another small acronym that you can use to get your mind wrapped around how you're going to be able to interact with veterans and what signs you should be looking for to determine if they're having thoughts of suicide or if they're having thoughts of feeling hopeless and not wanting to go on. And that training, believe it or not, is one of the ones that we make sure we have in fall and in our spring conference, and we have it regularly. We had Tyson Gaterman at our spring conference, and last fall we had he and another young lady came. No, he couldn't come, so he sent another person out of the VA Ann Arbor healthcare system. We try to have it at the forefront of our training because we interact with veterans every day in what we do. And we want to make sure, and with their family members. And we want to make sure that we've got some kind of sensitivity to listening to what the veterans are saying, how they're acting, what they're doing that may, in some instances, cause us to think we should get somebody else involved. We've done that. We've actually contacted the suicide prevention coordinators at the VA Ann Arbor healthcare system and told them about some of our veterans, things that they said to us when they were in the office or emails that we've got from them. Several of them were very, very angry with us. But in the end, they were also appreciative and came back and thanked us for making the referral.
And I suspect that you do what we do in our office at Legal Help for Veterans. When we have that phone call and you hear those things, first off, report it to somebody else if you're the person hearing that, and sort of test what you're hearing by talking to maybe somebody with a little different experiences. But we reach back out, too. You know, you don't want that person sitting on the couch stewing, really ticked off or really depressed without them knowing that somebody heard and that somebody is coming back and reaching out and say, hey, we can work things out. This is not hopeless. There are ways in which you're going to get your benefits. You don't have to go take things into your own hands at the VA. Carol Ann, as a nurse, suicide prevention is something that every medical provider, I assume, has at the forefront of their thinking when interacting with patients or, in this instance, veterans.
Yes, you're right. But it's sometimes interesting. You've got to acquire that listening skills to pick up when they're sending you signals. Mm-hmm. Once again, it's the signals and trying to interpret that, you know, how are you doing on your medications? Well, I sort of stopped them. Why'd you stop them? And I'm going away on a trip, and the euphoria. And so I think this mnemonic is great. I think the one Michael was talking about, SAVE, is great, and the VA, but it's be in tune with your family member. Know some of the signs and the signals. How are they doing at work, or are they not showing up at work? There are some signs to react to, and, you know, either sitting down with them. And sometimes the problem is you want to help, but you can't call their doctors and you can't do those things that are going to breach HIPAA. So it's really important to have a good relationship with that individual and to let them know you are concerned.
Well, VA does a great job in this area, but unfortunately it's a small percentage of those veteran suicides, 20 a day, that actually reach out and use VA care. The percentage is, I'm trying to draw it up, I don't recall it, but it's less than 30% actually of those who commit suicide are using the VA care system. So they've got great resources. If you're a friend or a family member, you should be talking to the VA, talk to the social work department. They offer groups in the mental health area on anger management and anxiety and stress management, depression support, mood improvements, grief and loss groups, PTSD and addiction, all of those things or some of those things which might be adding to what ultimately is a feeling of there's no other way to go but this last step of suicide. Before we go, why don't we give out the and move on to a new topic. Why don't we give out the Veterans Crisis Hotline number?
The Veterans Crisis Hotline number is 1-800-273-8255. And never be afraid to call and ask questions and try to help your veteran.
So I'm going to move on. Is that okay with my co-hosts? I know last time I tried this, you both had one more thing to say. Anything else, Michael?
I'm good, Jim.
Me too.
Okay.
See, thank you for asking.
If you just put them on the spot on live on air, you can actually quiet them down a little bit. So I did, because we're watching the clock here, and I know our veteran radio listeners want to hear about these other things, which we mentioned at the outset. One of them is an interesting recent report that's been given out that asked the question, or actually concluded, that veterans lack social emotional skills and that civilian employers believe they do. And this is a series of studies by Duke University. And these studies concluded that the perception of hiring managers, HR people, were that veterans were better suited for technical jobs, jobs with things, as compared to jobs with people. And I found this really sort of disturbing, interesting, and counterintuitive to my own experiences. And I've never really looked at it as an employer bias on veterans that way, but maybe that's my problem, that I haven't been looking at it as the way that the civilian employer does. Carol Ann, any reaction to this series of studies?
Well, I don't think you really want to hear my reaction, to be very honest. But
we are on the air.
But it's real interesting. Sometimes, Jim, over the years, you know, after serving for 36 years, and I know Michael, I know I've had some great employers who've come up to me and said, we love having you, but when you're not here, things seem to sometimes fall apart. And so, and I don't know if it has anything to related to that and your skill level. But, you know, it has been, you know, when you're serving in management positions and when you're responsible for a large group of people, sometimes that could occur.
Yeah, let me give you some specific examples out of this study. Is they partnered with a large North American restaurant chain, that's Duke University, over a couple of hundred employees, and they reviewed resumes. And they found in reviewing these that veterans, again, this is the sample result. Veterans were rated much more suitable for low-feeling job positions such as dishwasher and prep cook than they were for servers. And then there was another survey they did with a different group that they said veterans were viewed as a poorer fit for mental health careers when measured against non-veteran candidates. And another group that they studied who worked in management and hiring positions found that they were not a good fit for those kind of health professions, but they were okay for technical jobs. I was shocked when I read this about the HR bias, but I think it tells us something in the veteran community that we have to do a much better job of explaining, you know, what veterans go through. You can't run an army without leadership. You can't run an army without social skills, because you're managing 18-year-old kids up to 50-year-old guys. You want to talk a little bit about that, Michael?
I'm also very shocked. You know, I would probably question their sample size and their statistics and some of their regression and how they came to these conclusions, because you're dealing with, yes, 18-year-old kids that in most cases are in charge of weapon systems that cost $2 to $10 million. They're going through some of the best leadership training. Like in the Army, we have the Warrior Leadership course, and then we go on to the Basic Non-Commissioned Officers course, and then we go on to the Advanced Non-Commissioned Officers course. And all of this are teaching our non-commissioned officers how to manage a large number of people, a large amount of assets that could be worth millions and millions of dollars. And they come out of the military with those skill sets that literally employers are seeking. And I get emails weekly by Sean Sims, and he's the Veterans Employment Services Representative for Washtenaw County. And those lists of employers are all employers looking to hire veterans. And I mean, there are hundreds of employers and job positions weekly that he sends to me. And I'm actually overwhelmed sometimes. I want to call and say, Sean, don't just keep me off the email list for this week. But veterans do bring a certain level of savvy, experience, people skills, technical skills, a whole plethora of skills. And they have just about every single job that you can think of that exists in the civilian world exists in the military world, with the one exception of what the purpose of using that skill set is. Okay, and in the civilian world, you got one focus, and in the military, it's war fighting.
Well, I wanted to point out that I had the same thing. I bet this must be a crappy sample or size or study. Again, it's out of Duke University, a well-known university. But the president of IAVA commented in this article in Army Times. He said, "We have long known that employers hold biases against hiring veterans despite employers' claims to the contrary." Very interesting. So if you're out there and you're a veteran kind of battling this, trying to get the right job, keep at it. There's a lot of opportunities, as Michael says. But also make sure that you're portraying yourself with the social and emotional skills the job requires, because maybe there's this hidden bias we don't know about, and they see somebody who's all squared away, yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am, and they think, well, that person doesn't have the social skills to get along. So it may be how we're defining social and emotional skills, right?
That might be true. And I think, Michael, you described it eloquently. The experience that one of these young men and women bring to an employment when it's such an asset. And so, listeners, if you're out there, next time we do this next month, all you employers, call in and say how let's defute this article, because hire a veteran.
Well, I work with a lot of HR directors, and I'm going to be talking to them over the next month, since this just came out, and asking them, do you think you have a bias that you haven't recognized or articulated internally?
Mm-hmm.
Are you as an HR director are saying, geez, these guys don't screen through to me? Well, is that because there's some sort of unspoken bias. And there could be, again, a very interesting concept that surprised me, because so many people say, I want to hire a veteran. But is there a bias? Is there an unspoken bias? So we'll have to keep our eye out for that.
Yeah, I'm just coming off the heels of a meeting. I was contacted by the Washtenaw County Sheriff, Sheriff Clayton, and he wanted to sit down with me and said, you know, we talked several things about how to deal with veterans who are justice involved and how we can better maybe respond to those who are in crisis out in the community, much like our mental health crisis response team. But the conversation ended just like it did when we met 2 or 3 years ago, when he requested that I come and sit down with him. And he said, Michael, we need to get veterans, and we want to hire veterans for all of our positions, 911 dispatch operators, our corrections officers, our sheriff deputies, and we just have to figure out a better way of reaching out to that veteran community and recruiting them. And it's not, again, the first time Sheriff Clayton has said to me he wants to get more veterans hired on board, mm-hmm. as well as other community businesses, partners, for-profit and non-profit, who are looking to hire veterans. So you're right. It's kind of a surprising study.
Yeah, I really thought it was. So let's turn to the final topic that we teased about. And actually, this topic's been teased about for a couple of years. Yeah, we have heard from the director of the Ann Arbor VA for a couple of years that they were going to open a new Western Wayne County CBOC, but they couldn't tell us where. So that continued last week at the Veterans Summit. We can now tell you where, but before we do that, and I'll give it to you, Carolyn, to talk about, because you heard it, but I'll give it to Michael to explain what a CBOC is.
A CBOC is a community-based outpatient clinic that is strategically placed out in the community that gives veterans an alternative place to go so that they don't have to travel all the way to the main hospital, such as the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, or the John Dingell VA Medical Center, or the Saginaw VA Medical Center, or the Battle Creek VA Medical Center, or the Iron Mountain VA Medical Center up north. Because you see, that's 5 hospital facilities in a large state like Michigan. So these community-based outpatient clinics serve as satellites to those hospitals so that veterans don't have to travel so far to get their health care.
And where did the director of the Ann Arbor VA say the new Western Wayne County CBOC is going to be located,
Well,
Caroline?
Plymouth/Canton, but it is in Canton, a $20 million investment, 37,000 square feet. So it is along the I-275 corridor off of Ford Road, and some of the landmarks is behind Walmart. It's a beautiful setting, from what I've been told, and they hope to service anywhere between 5,000 to 13,000 veterans.
Wow.
In that community, that was a huge encatchment. It's got the primary. It will be the mental health and the extra facilities, you know, the labs, the common but expanded services at the CBOC.
Well, one of the interesting things about that location is right on 275, which is a major north-south road. Ford Road is a major east-west intersector, mm-hmm. so it should deliver great access. And I don't know that it's geographically exactly in the middle, but it's pretty close to being in the middle between the Ann Arbor Hospital System and the Detroit Hospital System.
That is correct, yes.
So I think, you know, again, going back to what we talked earlier about how VA seems to be focused on customer service, locating this facility to make it easier for folks in the western suburbs of Wayne County to get care and not have to run either east or west, except if it's really needed, is really, I think, a great move. And one of the things that's always a struggle at your hospital systems is parking.
It's parking.
So the whole idea that this is going to be so much easier for veterans,
yes.
who might have some mobility issues, certainly
yes.
would like to be able to park their car and walk to the front door,
right.
and not need a golf cart shuttle ride. I think this is going to be a great now when do they think they're going to open this up, Carol Ann?
16 months is their goal. And so 16 months from Friday, which was September 27th, and that is the goal. And I think they'll accomplish this mission.
Well, that's what we do here on Veterans Radio, is we bring you really current information, and whether it's about the Mission Act or this new CBOC. Always feel free to follow us on Facebook. Go to the web at www.veteransradio.net to follow along. You can certainly support the program there as well. And we appreciate you listening in here on WHAM 1600 AM. We thank Derek for working the board for us. And for our two guests, Michael Smith and Carol Ann Fossone, as always, you guys will be back in a month to answer some more questions. And I bet if Dale does it, he'll actually watch the phone screen and will answer the questions when they call in. And I'll try not to make that rookie mistake the next time I'm back. And until next time, you are dismissed.